Welcome to the Neurology Live Mind Moments Podcast. Tune in to hear leaders in neurology sound off on topics that impact your clinical practice. I'm your host, Matt Hoffman, Managing Editor for Neurology Live. In this episode, our Associate Editor Marco Meglio sat down with Dr. Michael Thorpe, the Director of the Sleep-Wake Disorders Center at Montefiore Medical Center and Professor of Neurology at Albert Einstein College of Medicine. He shared his perspective on the investigational narcolepsy agent FT218, his takeaways from the recent Sleep 2021 meeting, the current pipeline for excessive daytime sleepiness and cataplexy, and the pandemic's impact on sleep care. Let's dive in.
Director of the Sleep-Wake Disorder Center at Montefiore Medical Center and Professor of Neurology at Albert Einstein College of Medicine. Well, it's a very exciting time because in the past, we've been very limited in the number of medications that we've had. And in fact, the first medications that we used for narcolepsy were just for sleepiness, and they sort of had like a blunderbuss approach. They didn't only treat sleepiness, but they also caused stimulation of other body symptoms, systems, so that they could affect cardiovascular or gastrointestinal or psychological factors. What's happened in the last few years is that we've been able to have drugs available to us that are more specific to the sleep-wake process, so that they affect daytime sleepiness and cataplexy, and they don't have too much in the way of other side effects, so they're more specific to narcolepsy. So at this meeting, Sleep 2021, what we find is that a number of these newer drugs, we're beginning to get more information on their efficacy, how they should be administered, and what aspects of narcolepsy and which particular symptoms are most effective for. So it really is a very exciting time in narcolepsy because we're starting to see the development of new, more specific drugs for narcolepsy, which is going to help replace those older drugs that had greater side effects.
Obviously, there were a few different presentations at Sleep 2021 for FT218. So can you first to talk about this specific drug, and of the presentations that were presented, what stuck out to the most to you?
FT218 is a formulation of sodium oxybate. What we've known since 2000 is that sodium oxybate is a very effective agent for the treatment of narcolepsy. And not only does it treat the main symptoms of excessive daytime sleepiness and cataplexy, but it also treats the other features of abnormal REM phenomena as well as disturbed nocturnal sleep. So oxybate is really the only drug that affects all the features of narcolepsy. So it's really become a first-line drug for the treatment of narcolepsy, not only those with cataplexy, but even those without cataplexy. So this drug, FT218, is a modification of sodium oxybate in that typically sodium oxybate is given twice at night, at the beginning of the night, and then 2.5 to 4 hours later. But FT218 is given once at night, and it has, so it's a once nightly formulation of sodium oxybate. So the data presented at the meeting looked at the efficacy of FT218 and its effect on sleep quality, it's on the other abnormal REM phenomena. And the data tends to show that in the abstracts that were presented that FT218 is an effective drug for the treatment of excessive daytime sleepiness as well as cataplexy and disturbed nocturnal sleep. And it has that advantage of only being needing to be given once at night so that patients don't need to wake up in the middle of the night to get a second dose.
Is there a specific takeaway from this year's meeting that you're looking for, or there's something that you're looking specifically to take away from this year's meeting?
Well, I think the data on how effective these drugs are is always very important, and of course, any new drugs. And so from the meeting, we're finding that there are new medications, not only for narcolepsy, but for insomnia, for example, that are being presented, some of the early data on newer medications. One of the areas that we've been particularly interested in is in orexin. And although there's not much in, at this meeting on the orexin agonist, there is a presentation showing its effect on sleep, which is important to understand the efficacy of an orexin agonist. There have been a number of orexin antagonists that have been developed in the past, but at this meeting, there are a presentation of some new forms that are undergoing very early stages of investigation. So that's interesting to see that there's this continuous pipeline of new drugs becoming available to us for the treatment of sleep disorders, not only narcolepsy and idiopathic hypersomnia, but also insomnia itself.
Mm-hmm. And obviously, a majority of the meetings across a lot of neurological disorders this year have had some sort of involvement with COVID and pre-COVID and after COVID. So can you just talk a little bit about how the care for sleep disorders has changed throughout the pandemic? And where do you envision it going with the use of telemedicine and other things like that going forward?
Yes, well, of course, the pandemic's had a major impact upon medical care for patients, in particular patients not only of, obviously because of the effect directly of COVID, but those that haven't had COVID. It also has affected their care in so much as they haven't been able to have access to their usual clinicians in the same way. So what we've done is to move more towards telemedicine and telehealth, so that now most of our interactions with patients is really virtual by means of either phone contacts or by video contacts. And it's been a sort of a two-edged sword for the patients. They've had to learn technologies and the use of computers, which obviously is not a major problem for our younger patients with sleep disorders, but for the older patients, it's been a bit of a trial and difficulty. But as time goes on, they're becoming more comfortable with the new technologies, and so we have more easy interaction with them. But one of the big things about telemedicine, what it's done is that in the past, patients used to have to travel to the physician's office, and that would often take quite a lot of commuting time, particularly where I am in New York City, because for some patients that could take them nearly an hour to travel to the office. And of course, then they have to wait for their appointment and then have an hour's commute back again. So a lot of time taken up, whereas with telemedicine, of course, the whole interaction can be limited to 15 to 30 minutes or so. So it's much easier for the patients. And because of that, it's really improved our management, particularly for patients with narcolepsy, because what we've found is that these patients often require a lot of interaction in terms of treating them, and managing their medications. There's a lot of polypharmacy required now. And with telemedicine now, we can make adjustments to medications, and we can easily follow up with patients within a matter of days or weeks to make changes and adjustments. So from the patient point of view, I think it's actually worked out to be very advantageous in that they can have greater contact with the physician, whereas in the past, we were sort of reluctant to have to bring a patient into the office and spend several hours of their day having to have that office visit. So, you know, there's been some good things and some bad things. There are other areas where it's not so good. I mean, with some patients, we have technological problems and difficulties in communicating with them with telehealth, and that's been a little bit of a problem. But overall, I think it's been a very positive experience for those that are able to communicate with their physicians by telemedicine, because we can have this better interactive communication with them.
And at these sorts of meetings, I mean, at least from my perspective, you know, you kind of feel as though that you get a sense of where the management of the care is and where it could be going, and what areas could possibly need more help. So what do you feel is the current most unmet need in treating patients with narcolepsy and other types of sleep disorders?
Well, I think we still have a long way to go with many of the sleep disorders, particularly insomnia. I mean, we certainly have new medications available to us, and that's good. But we know that there's no one drug that suits all patients. And so we need to have a variety of medications available to us. But being able to select the right medication for the right drug is still not easy when it comes to insomnia. So often it's a trial and error process, and many patients have tried numerous medications before they find something effective. So we've still got a long way to go with insomnia. Certainly in the last few years, we've found that cognitive behavioral therapies for patients with insomnia has been a big advantage, and we combine that with any pharmacological treatment that we might undertake in these patients. But still with the medications, we still have a long way to go before we can really tailor the right medication to a specific patient. So I think what we need, and the unmet need really, I guess, is personalized medicine, where we are able to really focus in and choose the right drug without having to go through a trial and error process for many patients. So there are many things in the narcolepsy area, as I mentioned. It's very exciting because we have a lot of new drugs coming available to us. But now the unmet need is really understanding, you know, how do we use these medications? How do we combine them? For many of these patients, as I mentioned, they do require polypharmacy. And so getting the right combinations for these patients is still an area that we need more information on.
Mm-hmm. And also, you know, at least from what I've gained and what I've seen, especially in some of the other neurological disorders, is the use of telemedicine is obviously not just virtual visits and things like that, but creating actual modalities and, you know, systems that can assist these patients. So can you speak a little bit about where the space is in going and using technology to assist patients with sleep disorders?
Yeah, I think telemedicine is here to stay. There was a lot of question about whether once the pandemic was over that we were going to revert to previous methods of handling patients, but I don't think that's the case. I think certainly many patients still need to be seen in the office for physical examinations and things like that. But for other patients, once that information is obtained and it's a matter of adjusting medications or producing behavioral treatments, then I think telemedicine is going to be playing a bigger part. And there are more programs available, and as patients become more conversant with the technology, they're able to utilize some of these digital cognitive behavioral programs for the treatment of insomnia, so that the whole role of technology, I think, is going to play a bigger part. Hopefully also it will lead to newer ways for help and diagnosis, as well as new technologies get developed that interact with the computer to be able to provide information. So I think everything is leading in the direction of improving clinical care for patients and making access to clinical care much better for patients.
Well, you've provided a lot of great insight, especially to this meeting and where the space is moving. Is there anything else that you'd like to mention about the meeting, or just anything in general at the top of your head in terms of where the space is going?
No, I'm delighted to see this meeting take place, and pleased to see that there are so many participants and so much research now being presented at this meeting. I think last year there was a little bit of discomfort associated with this type of virtual meeting, and of course many physicians were so caught up with dealing with the pandemic that some of the research sort of got dropped behind. But now that we're coming out of the pandemic and people are more comfortable getting back to their research and presentations, I think these type of virtual meetings are going to play a part. Now, whether we'll get back entirely to a full sort of physical meetings going forward, I don't know. I think there may always be a place to have some digital and virtual interaction, even at meetings where many people may physically attend. So I think, you know, things are certainly changing as we move to the future.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Neurology Live Mind Moments podcast. To support the show, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And as always, for more neurology news and expert-driven content, visit neurologylive.com.